Seven Truths. Bishop Giles, it is not for lack of desire that I do not attend Mass and receive the sacraments, but rather because Jesus Christ commands me to stay away from all clerics that do not hold their spiritual jurisdiction from a pope. What do you and the other thousands of traditionalists know that I do not know? Let us review some of the main truths of what I understand. First truth. The Catholic Church could never change her dogmas because they are immutable. She is guided by God, the Holy Ghost, and therefore never makes a mistake. Quote, the faith shall never vary in any age, for one is a faith which justifies the just of all ages. It is unlawful to differ even by a single word from apostolic doctrine, unquote, of Pope St. Leo the Great and Magno Munere. Quote, the Catholic faith is such that nothing can be added to it, nothing taken away. Either it is held in its entirety or rejected totally. This is the Catholic faith, which, unless a man believes faithfully and firmly, he cannot be saved. Unquote of Pope Benedict XV, Ad Beatissimi. Quote, nothing can ever pass away from the words of Jesus Christ, nor can anything be changed which the Catholic Church received from Christ to guard, protect, and preach. Unquote from Pope Pius IX, Ubi Primum. Quote, nothing new is to be allowed, for nothing can be added to the old. Look for the faith of the elders, and do not let our faith be disturbed by a mixture of new doctrines. Unquote from Pope St. Sixtus III, De Unum. Quote, let nothing of the truths that have been defined be lessened, nothing altered, nothing added, but let them be preserved intact in word and in meaning. Unquote from Pope Gregory XVI, Mirari Vos. Quote, the faith which God has revealed has not been proposed like a theory of philosophy to be elaborated upon by human understanding, but as a divine deposit to be faithfully guarded and infallibly declared. Therefore, that sense of sacred dogmas is to be kept forever, which Holy Mother Church has once declared, and it must never be deviated from on the suspicious pretext of a more profound understanding. Let intelligence and science and wisdom increase, but only according to the same dogma, the same sense, the same meaning. If anyone shall have said that there may ever be attributed to the doctrines proposed by the Church a sense which is different from the sense which the Church has once understood and now understands, let him be anathema. Unquote from the First Vatican Council, Dogmatic Institute on the Catholic Faith. You can see Denzinger's 1800. Quote, for it is not allowable for anyone to change even one word, nor allow one syllable to be passed over. Unquote from St. Cyril of Alexandria, his Epistle 55. Quote, wherefore, if there be revealed to us anything new or different, we must in no way give consent to it, not even though it were spoken by an angel. Unquote from St. John of the Cross. Quote, our faith is identical with that of the ancients. Deny this, and you dissolve the unity of the Church. We must hold this for certain, that the faith of the people at the present day is one with the faith of the people of past centuries. Were this not true, then we would be in a different church than they, and literally, the church would not be one, unquote, from St. Thomas Aquinas. Second truth, the Catholic Church teaches that all jurisdiction emanates from the Pope. Let us review the unchangeable belief of every Catholic from four sources which proves this second truth. First source, as explained above by Pope Leo XIII in Sanctus Cognitum, Holy Writ attests that jurisdiction was given to Peter alone, and that all bishops receive their ordinary jurisdiction directly from the Pope, not from Jesus Christ. Hence, every Catholic must believe and accept the obvious, unchangeable truth that not one bishop, consecrated since October 9, 1958, has received ordinary jurisdiction unless they received a special mandate before that date. Second source, Dom Geringer, quote, all authority emanates from the apostolic see. All spiritual authority comes from Peter. We then, both priests and people, have a right to know whence our pastors have received their power. If they claim our obedience without having been sent by the Bishop of Rome, we must refuse to receive them, for they are not acknowledged by Christ as his ministers. They must be as aliens to us, for they have not been sent, they are not pastors. Unquote from Dom Geringer. Dom Geringer either lied to us or else he absolutely wrote the truth while explaining above what the Holy Catholic Church believes and teaches. I believe he absolutely wrote the truth. Consequently, every Catholic who believes all the truths which the Holy Catholic Church believes and teaches has no choice but to refuse to receive all traditionalist clerics, for they are not acknowledged by Christ as his ministers. All traditionalist clerics must be as aliens to us. Jesus Christ did not send you to be our pastors, and you have no mission, authority, or jurisdiction to function in the church founded by Jesus Christ. Third source, the pillar and ground of the truth, by Father Cox. Quote, it is not enough for it to teach all the doctrines of the apostles, if it lacks either their orders or their jurisdiction. Even if valid orders exist, where jurisdiction is lacking, there is no real apostolicity. Unquote. This third source forces three additional truths into our intellect. One, traditionalist sects do not have all four marks of the church founded by Jesus Christ. Two, without ordinary or delegated jurisdiction, no traditionalist cleric can found a religious body or receive religious vows in the name of the Catholic Church. Three, as a result, all, quote, religious vows, unquote, professed in the traditionalist sects are null and void. Read from the book Catechism on the Religious State with an imprimatur given in 1955. Quote, question 124. When are vows said to be public and when are they private? Answer. Vows are said to be public when they are accepted by the lawful superior in the name of the church. Vows are private or of devotion when they lack this official acceptance on the part of the church. Each of the faithful, if it so pleases him, can oblige himself before God to do something more in his Christian life than is absolutely required. He can, out of his particular devotion and fervor of spirit, make vows. However, the vows are considered private if the authority of the church is not called upon to confirm them. In order that vows be considered public, the church empowers superiors, and Patrick Henry inserts, that have authority and jurisdiction, unquote of my insertion, to accept them in her name in the form of a quasi-contract. Question 125. Are the vows of religion made in a religious institute considered private or public? Answer. Religious vows, to be truly those of religious, must always be public. Indeed, they are religious vows precisely because they are public, that is, accepted by the Church. Unquote. Fourth source, the Exposition of Christian Doctrine, written in 1898, explained how the infallible Church taught her children that, 1. Bishops hold their jurisdiction from the Pope. 2. Bishops who do not receive their spiritual jurisdiction from the Pope are unlawful intruders, schismatics, and cut off from the Church. 3. Priests who do not hold their jurisdiction from a Catholic bishop are unlawful intruders, schismatic, and cut off from the Church. Third truth, Pope Pius VI told us to keep away from all intruders and not to hold communion with them. See the encyclical Caritas. Fourth truth, Pope Leo XIII stated that St. Thomas Aquinas was the holiest of wise men and the wisest of holy men. See his encyclical Eterni Patris. Fifth truth, St. Thomas Aquinas told us we sin and do not receive grace when we receive sacraments, except baptism, from all who are cut off from the Church. See of Supplement, Question 19, Article 5. This includes all intruder clerics and sects who cannot prove their jurisdiction and authority emanates from a pope. Sixth truth, bishops and priests are obliged to prove that their jurisdiction is derived from a pope. Seventh truth, traditionalists often resort to epikaia in their attempt to justify and make lawful the many changes and new doctrines they implement. Epikaia does not save the day. Let us review some truths about epikaia as explained by Father Lawrence Joseph Riley in his book, The History, Nature, and Use of Epikaia in Moral Theology, copyright 1948. Quote, in short, it may be concluded that in regard to matters which touch the essence of the sacraments, the use of epikaia is always excluded. Unquote, from page 344. Quote, in regard to the essence of these sacraments, what has been explained above of all the sacraments is applicable to them, namely, that epikaia is never licit. Unquote, from page 347. Quote, epikaia is not an act of jurisdiction. Unquote, from pages 231 and 232. Do you agree that epikaia is excluded in every attempt to obtain jurisdiction? Do you agree that without jurisdiction being obtained by some means, bishops and priests cannot absolve sins in confession? Quote, at most, epikaia can excuse the individual from the precept, but it can never confer the capacity to act. Epikaia cannot bestow upon him the power which he does not now possess, nor can epikaia restore the power which the law has withdrawn. For such bestowal or restoration of power, a positive act is required. Unquote, from page 387 of Father Joseph Riley's book. Do you agree that epikaia can never confer to a bishop the capacity to perform the act of consecrating another bishop without a papal mandate? Do you agree that epikaia can never bestow upon anyone authority, jurisdiction, or mission in the Catholic Church? Do you agree that epikaia does not bestow upon traditionalist clerics the power they need to found religious bodies, or the power to receive religious vows in the name of the Church? Do you agree that epikaia cannot restore the power of jurisdiction, which bishops and priests lost when they joined the non-Catholic Novus Ordo sect? Do you agree that jurisdiction can only be restored by positive act of someone who has jurisdiction himself? Do you agree, therefore, that the bishops who lost their jurisdiction by joining a non-Catholic sect can only receive it again by positive act from a pope? Quoting again from Father Lawrence Joseph Riley's book, D'Angelo endeavors to show that practically all modern canonists consider Episcopate to be a purely moral or ethical institute, having validity only in the internal forum. Unquote from page 6. Quote, intimately connected with this problem is the question of whether or not Episcopate has any standing in the external forum. It would appear to be the rather general consensus of authorities today that it has not. Writing in Apollinarius, D'Angelo points out that St. Thomas considers Episcopate to be a merely moral element, and that modern writers believe it to have reference only to moral and not to juridic matters. Van Hoof contends that, since Episcopate is not an act of jurisdiction, it has value only in the internal forum. Hilling seems almost unwilling to give any standing to Episcopate at all, believing that it practically amounts to self-dispensation, which is in contradiction to law as a binding norm. He concludes at the most that it may be recognized in the internal forum. Unquote from pages 232 and 233. Quote, but the point here is that, in spite of the existence or necessity of this objective element, the effects of Episcopate are confirmed to the internal forum. The lack of immutability and lack of guilt for transgressing the letter of the law have standing only in that forum. Unquote from page 235. Do you agree that the internal forum pertains to confession, whereas consecrating bishops, preaching sermons, founding religious bodies, and accepting religious vows in the name of the Church all pertain to the external forum? Father Riley has quoted St. Thomas and these other authors to teach us that Episcopate is not an act of jurisdiction, and the theologians have told us that Episcopate has value only in the internal forum. Does not the consecration of bishops pertain to juridic matters? Now remember, Episcopate does not pertain to juridic matters. Quoting again from Father's book, there can be no doubt that the majority of theologians reject entirely and explicitly any possibility of the licit use of Episcopate in matters involving the natural law. Unquote. Vasquez states definitely that Episcopate has no place in reference to the natural law. That there is no place for Episcopate in reference to the natural law is the firm opinion of Sarez. Unquote from page 266. The essential function of Episcopate is to amend or correct laws which are deficient. But the natural law can never be deficient, maintains Maldarez, and hence Episcopate can never be allowed in regard to it. Unquote from page 272. Quote, Article 3, Thesis, Episcopate may not be applied to precepts of the natural law. A careful study of the problem at hand seems clearly to lead to the conclusion that Episcopate, understood as a correction of law, where it is deficient due to the universality of its expression, may never be applied to the natural law. Unquote from page 276. Father William Humphrey, in his book, Elements of the Religious Life, reminds us on page 42, quote, Pope Innocent III decreed that no religious order should in future be erected without the approbation of the Sovereign Pontiff. Approbation, in some fashion, was always, from the beginning of the Church of Christ, necessary in order to the introduction into the Church of a new religious body. This approbation is, as it were, a canonization by which the Institute is publicly and authoritatively set forth as holy. The necessity of approbation does not arise from canon law alone. It is founded in the law of nature, unquote, from Elements of Religious Life. Approbation from a pope is necessary for a new religious order. Do you agree that approbation from a valid, licit Catholic bishop who has ordinary jurisdiction was always necessary to introduce a new religious body into the Church? 1. Do you agree that approbation to found a new religious body is founded in the law of nature? 2. Do you agree that Episcopia may not be called upon to permit one to violate, disobey, or contravene any law of nature? 3. Do you agree that a bishop must possess authority and jurisdiction in the Catholic Church to be qualified, capable, and competent to give approbation, approval, and sanction to a religious body? 4. Do you agree that none of the traditionalist clerics possess authority and jurisdiction in the Catholic Church? 5. Do you agree that not even one of these new religious bodies received their necessary approbation from a bishop with jurisdiction and authority? 6. Do you agree that the members of these new religious bodies are no more a religious priest, brother, or sister in the Catholic Church than is anyone else, such as your local dog catcher or mail carrier? 7. Do you agree that Episcopia does not save the day? Episcopia does not take God's unwanted laws away?